thank you, Vicki, and it's great to be with you today. I appreciate the opportunity to come talk to you and be on the panel with my good friends here. Just like Frederick, I've spent the last 30 years of my life traveling the world and preaching the benefits of U.S. cotton. And I'm a U.S. cotton believer to my core. It's fed my family for a lot of years, and I couldn't be happier to be in this business with you. And we do a lot of things right. And I think it's important today that we talk about that a little bit, and I'm sorry about this font, but our classing data in the U.S., we give bale-by-bale data on cotton, and it's the gold standard of the world. Australia doesn't do it. Brazil can't do it. India surely doesn't do it, but we do it. We give bale-by-bale data on our crop, the entire thing. That bale-by-bale data dovetails very well with the EFS system. And that's also the gold standard of the world in terms of fiber selection. We're a top-tier growth. Now, people will talk to you about the intrinsic value of Australian cotton and its fine fiber, for sure. But the U.S. is a top-tier growth as well. When you look at Brazilian cotton and you look at African cotton and you look at the other inch and an eighth middling-style cottons around the world, certainly we are near the very top tier. But we have work to do there. But at least we know where we need to head in terms of total quality package, and that'd be toward the Australian varieties and toward the California Acala varieties. But as Frederick so adeptly pointed out, we are certainly heading in that direction, and we compliment the industry for that. On-time shipment, again, gold standard of the world. On-time shipment, contract sanctity. If you buy U.S. cotton for January shipment, you're going to get that bale January shipment. So contract sanctity, on-time delivery, we are the gold standard of the world, and I couldn't be happier about that, and I think we need to at least bring that up today. Vicki asks, what do you hear from your customers? What do they say when you go around and talk to them? And one of the things that we're working on now in the Quality Task Force is color drift. Now, we're not really sure what causes this, but the gist is when we take high plus B cotton, and for those of you that aren't totally familiar with RDM plus B, a high degree of yellowness. We take a bale that may have been a little bit wet, may have had a moisture issue. It classes a 21 or a 31 on the original Smith Doxy class, but it has a high plus B, high degree of yellowness. When that bale goes into the warehouse and sits for months at a time, we're having color drift. The bale becomes more yellow. It colors up more. It gets bloomier as it sits. Well, the issue here is that that bale's classed in November, goes into a warehouse, and it's sold in April and shipped in June, and it arrives in the Far East in July. And by the time it gets to the Far East, instead of being a 21 or a 31, the way we applied the sale, it's a 33 or 34 grade. That's causing a big issue with our customers, especially the guys that are going to pay for a high-grade bale of cotton. They don't want a 33 color, a 34 color. And the real ramification is, when we go to these meetings in China, when we have the CCI events, inevitably they stand up and say, I bought U.S. green card quality final from you guys in the U.S. You shipped me the cotton. It's clearly not there, and I want to file a quality claim. Well, it's a big trade issue. When they buy U.S. green card class final, that's the final word. That's the final say. You go back to the USDA database, and it was classed at 31 grade the first time around, and that's it. That's final. Well, they want to file quality claims against these sales, and that's a non-starter. It's a trade issue. So we have to clean this thing up for that very reason. We have to protect the integrity of our U.S. classing system. Again, this is a quality task force issue. I know Kent Fountain's worked on it a lot. Frederick and I are both on the quality task force, and we're doing some studies on this now to try to determine, number one, iron content in the soil. Is it an origin issue? Is it a heat in a container issue? Just what is causing it? But something we're working on and something that we'll eventually solve. We mentioned it earlier. We're going to talk a lot about it at this meeting. But, you know, folks, this contamination issue just can't, the importance of this can't be overstated. It's something that affects everyone. It doesn't matter. Just like Frederick said, it doesn't matter if you're the gin that has the issue. When that bale gets to the Far East or when that bale gets to Chuck's Mill and there's a piece of plastic in it, it's a U.S. bale and it's a U.S. problem. So we can't underestimate the importance of stamping out contamination. Now, there is a whole business line in the world in non-contaminated yarn. Non-contaminated yarn trades at a great premium, and it's a good profit center for a lot of textile mills. In order to make and sell non-contaminated yarn, these mills have to buy certain origins. They have to buy Brazilian or U.S. or Australian. What's happening today is that we're losing our reputation as a non-contaminated origin. What's happened over the last 5 or 6 years is the known contaminated growths, Indian cotton, West African cotton, the bales that everybody know are contaminated, they've done a much better job, and they're decreasing their contamination. Our contamination's actually getting a little worse, and so you can see it's starting to narrow the difference in those world origins. It's very important. It's very important to our market position that we become the bale the world trusts. It's our Cotton Council International slogan, U.S. Cotton, the cotton the world trusts. It's very important that we get back there. There have been several pushes at ICA. Most of you know that the outgoing chairman of ICA was a Bangladeshi textile mill owner. And currently, in the International Cotton Association rules, which we all trade by, in the rules it says the damages of a contaminated bale are limited to the cleaning cost of the cotton. That's all a textile mill can claim at this time. There's a great push within ICA to allow these textile mills to come back to the shipper and claim on millions of dollars of yarn or fabric or finished goods. And folks, where do you think those claims are going to wind up? They're coming all the way back to the farm. So again, there's a push every year. Let's make the shipper, let's make the origin more responsible for the damage that they're causing in our yarn. So let's work as an origin. Let's work as partners. Let's be the bale the world trusts. Our CCI events, they're expensive. You know, we go around the world on the CCI money. We travel and we talk about markets and we talk about how great U.S. cotton is and all the attributes. And we get to the question and answer portion. And keep in mind, we've invited people, mills that have used U.S. cotton for years, but we also invite the people that have never used U.S. cotton. They've been West African users or Indian cotton users. We invite those guys, too, to try to sell them. At the end of the program, in the question and answer section, inevitably, a mill will stand up with a bag full of yellow plastic and say, I bought your cotton because I thought you were a non-contaminated growth, and this is what I got in your cotton. And that's bad enough for the guys that are sit there, that sit beside them, that use U.S. cotton and they're familiar with our attributes. But what about the guy that's never used it? What about the guy in the back of the room that was almost convinced? So, again, it's an origin issue. It's everyone's issue. It's not a farmer issue. It's not a ginner issue. It's an industry issue for us. And we pledge, especially in the merchandising sector, American cotton shippers, we pledge to work with you, and we're going to stomp it out. And last is this continued trash and bark issue, sort of along the lines that I talked to Mr. Vandersloos about in his presentation. It's becoming a real issue. It's waste material in a bale of cotton. It's non-fiber material that your customer is paying a fiber price for. So as these trash values start to increase, it's becoming a bigger and bigger issue to our credibility. Also, fibrous-like, long fibrous pieces of bark-like material increasing. Now, I think 2018 is a one-off year. I think it's a year that we all just want to get behind us. I know Chuck said that. I can assure you at our shop we want the same thing, and probably as growers and ginners you do too. But I think 2018 was a one-off situation. It's far better situation this year. But I do think that there should be some study, some attention given to door settings, to drum arrangement, to whatever we could do to minimize this bark material in our cotton. In merchandising, we've been complicit in this as well, especially in the Mid-South. That's my home. I live in Memphis, Tennessee, and the Delta growers and the Delta cotton business is in my blood. And I'll tell you what we've done in the Delta. We've said to the growers, you know, if you got a 41 color, we're really not going to pay anything if it's 3-leaf or 2-leaf. We're just going to count it all as a 41-4 if you got 41 color. And furthermore, if you got 5-leaf, it's going to be a relatively small discount, about 100 points, 150 points. not enough to get anybody's attention. So if that discount's pretty narrow for the five leaf and the premium's non-existent for a two or three leaf, what's the message that we've really sent to the grower? Man, turn that second set of lint cleaners off and gentle gin my cotton and put a little more leaf in there and let me sell it to Chuck at a cotton price. That makes me more money than trying to clean my cotton. But what I'll say to you today is, why don't we try to get back to the art of cotton ginning? Why don't we go back to the cotton ginner that can look at the seed cotton and apply that one stage or two stages of lint cleaning the way the seed cotton really calls for? Why don't we get back to the art of cotton ginning as we build this brand? And I would say in closing, there's some real low-hanging fruit out here to improve our quality and take a next step. If you are or you know anybody that's redirecting reclaimed fiber into the gin stream, man, that's your uniformity and short fiber content problem right there. That shouldn't happen. That shouldn't happen. You're making a faulty product at your gin if you're putting these moats back into the bale. And I understand it's a turnout issue, but it affects our reputation longer term. Ginning for higher leaf, put a little more leaf in the bale, a little more weight. Again, violation of our brand promise. Let's have a better product than that. Let's be better. And finally, along the lines of Frederick's photos that he showed, if you're ginning wet cotton, I know it's an issue too, but those pictures are what that bale looks like when it gets to Asia in June, and our customers don't like it. You know, he spent the money, he's made his production plan, he's waited on that cotton on a 60-day transit, and the bale gets there and it's unusable and it's a problem. It's a real problem. So all in all, man, I see a lot of young people out in this hall and it's exciting for me. I want this industry to last another 30 years, so way past my tenure. And I want to do that by having the best product in the world. And I want those guys, I want the next generation to take this bale and take these samples and go all over the world and tell everybody how great we are. So with that, I'll close, but I want to thank you for having me today, and I guess we'll assemble our panel.